Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the new episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we have a fun episode planned for you. We're going to name our winners and losers from the Serie A weekend. We're going to preview the upcoming matches. We're recording this on Monday. There's an Inter-Cagliari game tomorrow and then a full slate of matches on Wednesday. We'll preview that. We'll make some picks with our friend Thousand Names. We'll get to a lot of great Twitter questions, and I can tell the transfer window is closer and closer by the types of questions that we get. And then we have a great interview. We wanted to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Milan's new owners, and we have a great friend of the podcast, Michael Lisi, his first time on the show to talk about Milan. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. And I have a two-part question for you, Alex. I've been thinking a lot about it. So I want to, as it stands now, which season would you rather have, Alex? And that could be either Roma's or Napoli's. And I have a feeling you as a Chelsea fan would take either of those two. But if you had to pick between those two, which one would you pick? And the other question that I have, and this is something that John Solano, our friend, tweeted, do you think Roma should prioritize Serie A and they need, for financial reasons, it would really help them to get back to the Champions League, or just go all in and try to get a trophy, as improbable as it is, and prioritize the semifinals against Liverpool? So I wanted to get your take on these two things, Alex.
All right. Well, this is a fun two-parter. Let me start by answering the first question. Which season would I rather have between Roma and Napoli? Hey, that is very tough, especially considering how well Roma has played recently, the fact that they're still in the Champions League, the fact that right now they're seated in third in Serie A. But with that said, I still have to go with Napoli. They've had a tremendous season. It's just Juve's had a better season. But Napoli is 100% in the Champions League for next year. They're 17 points ahead of Roma. They've been fantastic. And assuming Sarri stays, and I need to assume that to answer this question properly, they should be a destination for players to want to go there. They're such an impressive team offensively. They've really built a foundation for attractive football. They have an identity. They might be just a couple players away from leapfrogging Juve. You never know. So I think they've done enough this season. Sure, they didn't win the Scudetto, but I think they've done enough this season to build on it for next season. I think you don't just throw your hands up and say, I'm done. I can't beat Juve. I don't think they should blow anything up. I think they just need to realize what they could have done better. As you say often, maybe they should have acquired a couple more players in January, but they're not that far. I still think they've had a great season. And now Roma has two, but everything I just said about Napoli, I can't really say for Roma. I don't really see a huge identity with Roma. I just can't really grasp what direction they may or may not be going. But getting the second question, if I'm Roma, do I focus all on Serie A or all on the Champions League? That's really tough, because if Roma had drawn Bayern or Real in the quarterfinal, I would have said, lightning doesn't strike twice. Focus all on Serie A. You're not going to beat Barcelona over two legs and then beat Real Madrid or Bayern Munich over two legs. But they drew Liverpool. No disrespect to Liverpool, but they're not Bayern or Real. So they really do have a decent shot of getting to the Champions League final. And then once you're in the Champions League final, anything can happen. It's one leg. Anything can happen. So my answer to this question is you got to kind of play it risky and take both just as seriously. As we've said, Inter is not far behind in fifth place. Roma and Lazio are tied on points. They're both sitting in third and fourth respectively. So you have to take Serie A seriously. But with a decent shot at winning the Champions League, you have to take that seriously. You just absolutely have to. No way can you go lackluster on that one. So very much like Juve has all season long, you really have to take both seriously. Try to keep as many players fresh as you can while having strong lineups out there for all matches. So it's definitely a tricky one, because the other teams remaining in the Champions League, Bayern, Real, and Liverpool, all kind of have their fates decided within their league. And Roma has so much to play for with not much left in the season. It's an exciting time for Roma fans, but it's definitely going to be a tricky time for Roma to really balance this out. It's a little bit risky, but they kind of have to go all in on both. So that's where I stand on it. How about you, David?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this, and a couple of things like keep popping in my mind. And I think people that are familiar with American sports will know exactly what these quotes come from. The first one is Herm Edwards famously say, "You play to win the game." And the flip side of it is trust the process, which we saw with the 76ers. So, you know, I'm really torn because I feel like in a lot of ways with sports, and I think this happens a lot more if you follow American sports with drafts or whatnot, and like looking to the future and always trying to set yourself up for the future. And, you know, maybe ignoring in the short term what to do. I've even, like, in my mind wrestling with the idea, you know, if the Celtics could get Anthony Davis, would I trade Tatum in the deal? And it's like, you know, Tatum's going to be great for 10, 15 years. I don't know with Anthony Davis. But on the other hand, you bring Anthony Davis now, maybe you can just win the title now. So I'm really torn on this. I think ultimately Roma, they haven't won a trophy in a long time. They have actually, you know, it's not a good chance, but they have a decent chance of making it to the final. And like you said, then at that point in one match, anything can happen. So I'm going to channel Herm Edwards and say you play to win the game. And I think, yeah, it's great. You qualify to the Champions League because you want the revenue for it, but you also qualify for the Champions League to win the damn thing. And I think it would be incredible if Roma did it. Already they're getting a lot of exposure with their brand. We're seeing Lana Del Rey with a Roma hat. In a lot of ways, I used to always say, you know, Napoli's the new hipster team. Now Roma's kind of beating them to the punch with it. And it's actually really pretty fascinating because I think, you know, we've talked a lot of times on the podcast, like in Serie A, they haven't been exactly that inspiring, especially compared to previous Romas. But in the Champions League, they really turn it on. So my answer is, you know, as much as Napoli has the guarantee of going back to the Champions League, I kind of like that Roma has this opportunity. So maybe in a way I'd rather have this season, but I'm really torn. And I think, you know, sometimes with sports, and I think more on the American side of sports, we're becoming a little bit too cute, like always looking to the future and setting up a dynasty, when at the end of the day, if you can win a damn title, you just should, because at the end of the day, that's what teams are competing for.
Oh, I like it. Getting a little Philadelphia 76ers lingo into the pod. Very well done, especially since the playoffs have started. But what also happened this weekend was another weekend of Serie A. So, David, without further ado, who do we have for our winners and losers of episode 104 of the CalcioLand podcast?
Yeah, so this weekend, you know, it wasn't the most exciting in Serie A. We had a lot of 0-0 matches, but there are some performances that stand out to me. I really enjoyed watching Atalanta-Inter. It was a draw, but there was this exciting 19-year-old striker for Atalanta. I had never heard of Musa Baro. Intriguing player. I think he played because Petagna was suspended. Pretty exciting player. Handanovic denied him what would have been his first goal in Serie A. So definitely a player to watch. We had two big wins in the race to avoid relegation. We had Genoa won a match. Cagliari did as well. They are basically, especially Genoa, in much better position in the race to avoid relegation. One team that's essentially already relegated is Benevento, but their striker, Diabate, and our friend Matteo Bonetti tweets about him often. He's always tweeting his goal average. I think Matteo probably added him to his FIFA team. He's really aware of his goal average, but now he has a record. He scored braces in three matches in a row in Serie A. That hadn't happened since Hubner back in 2001. Serie A, old school fans are very familiar with what a great striker Hubner was. So congratulations to Diabate. And exciting goals too, not just volume. Then we had Sassuolo. Politano had his fourth goal in four matches. He's actually outshining Berardi as their best player. Probably the biggest winner of the weekend was Donnarumma, who's the youngest player to appear in 100 Serie A matches, had that record against his hometown team, Napoli, then had that amazing save at the end of the match to deny his hometown team. I've said it a few times, what really impresses me about Donnarumma is he's such a tall keeper, but he gets to the ground so fast, and we saw that on that last-minute save. Also, shout-out to Musacchio and Zapata. A lot of people thought Napoli was going to be able to score some goals without Milan's two starting center backs. Except for Deanne, Musacchio had a good match. Zapata, other than Donnarumma, was probably Milan's best player. So kudos to him. And also a huge shout-out to our friends, the Milan Club in Montreal, our friend Marcello, who we had on the Milan special. They were the guests on Rai's Giostra del Gol. So for those of you that sometimes watch matches on Rai, you know that they have video chats with fan clubs around North America and around the world. And it was great to see Marcello and our friends in the Milan Club Montreal. So shout out to them. And how can we not mention Douglas Costa's brilliant performance, 3 assists off the bench, really, really outstanding performance against Sampdoria. Like in Serie A, Douglas Costa, his speed, dribbling ability, really stand out, but his passing, really outstanding. So what a buy for Juve. So those are our winners. On the flip side, I don't have too many losers. I think Inter, in a way, the result of the Roma derby, which was a draw between Roma and Lazio, helps them a little bit, but they could have capitalized more. They had a draw against Atalanta, now 3 matches in a row that they don't score goals. Flip side, the race to avoid relegation. We had Udinese now losing 9 in a row. We had Crotone that lost to Genoa. Chievo and Torino. Chievo is still in the thick of the race to avoid relegation at their draw at Torino. So those are our winners and losers for the weekend.
All right, David. Well, we have a unique week. We actually have Serie A midweek. So I assume Thousand Names sent you his picks. Who do we have for our game picks from you and Thousand?
He did. So he sent me these. I'm reading them real fast. So as usual, he sent me 3 games. We'll listen to his picks. I'll give you mine, and I'll bring a few other games to your attention. So the first match that he picked is Torino-Milan. He has it 1-1. Goals by Belotti and Kalinic. He says that in the match between these two former noble teams, tactics are going to win. The two Bidoni striker, the two busts are going to score in this match, and that Mazzarri is going to keep his streak of playing well against the top teams. He rarely loses in a big match. So Torino-Milan 1-1 is Thousand's prediction. You know what? I'm going to agree completely with this one, even with the goal scorers. For Milan, they do get Bonucci back. The Romagnoli is still going to be out. Let's see if Belotti can capitalize. For our listeners in Italy, Torino-Milan 1-1, Belotti-Kalinic, vince il tatticismo nella sfida tra nobili e decadute, assegni 2 bidoni attaccanti, Mazzarri con le big si esalta sempre. So that's the first prediction. Next one, we have Lazio traveling to Tuscany to face Fiorentina at the Franchi. Thousand Names has Lazio winning 2-1 with a brace by Immobile, and that Simeone is going to score for Fiorentina. And he says, all empires eventually end. I think Fiorentina was on a very good streak. They had won 6 in a row before the draw against Spal. I think that's what's in reference to. Their former coach, Pioli, is going to have tears of joy after the match. And he says that Inzaghi is a coach who's more lucky than good. So pretty controversial take. I'm going to have this, actually. I'm going to go 0-0 draw. Fiorentina has been on a good streak. I think Lazio still has a little bit of a hangover from that Europa League and then facing in the derby Roma just this Sunday. So in Italian, Fiorentina-Lazio 1-2, Simeone-Immobile 2 gol, tutti gli imperi finiscono, solo lacrime di gioia per la Fiorentina di Pioli, Inzaghi allenatore più fortunato che bravo. And the last match, Juve fans, get ready, Thousand Names coming back at you. Crotone-Juve 1-1, goals by Simi and Higuain. He goes in the derby of the fan bases for Calabria, Vince Zenga. Juve has a lot of fans down in southern Italy. Zenga, of course, is the coach for Crotone, and says after the match, Zenga is going to call former Inter president Moratti to make fun of Juve for the loss against Real Madrid, and that Allegri is now going to be worried about Napoli passing him in the standings. You know, Thousand Names always takes an opportunity to rile you up Juve fan. So in Italian, Cimi Higuain, nel derby del tifo calabrese vince Zenga, telefonata con Moratti a fine partita, a deridere la Juve per la sconfitta con Real, Allegri vede il sorpasso del Napoli. Now I will say in Thousand's defense, Juve has struggled against the worst teams. They had that draw against Spal, against Benevento. They won, but it wasn't the most decisive win. So this match could actually be a little bit of a trap game for Juve, but I still think they're going to win, and I think it's going to be 1-0 with a goal by Higuain. Couple of other matches I want to bring to your attention. Inter plays Cagliari, big match for their Champions League hopes on Tuesday. Roma is at home against Genoa. The other match for the Scudetto race is Napoli at home with Udinese. So check out those games. We'll talk about them on Thursday. So now let's get to some Twitter questions. We have some really good ones. As usual, if you want to send us a question for the podcast, we cover transfers, Serie A, Champions League. If you want to send us some movies and music questions and TV questions, you know we love those. Just use the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, let's start with the Sarri-led team. David, should Napoli consider building their future attack around Milik?
Now, I have to say, Milik's been really sensational. Like, in a lot of matches, he comes off the bench, and he almost wins it for Napoli. You know, we'll get into it with the next question, but I've been really impressed. And people forget, at least I did, when Napoli first brought him from Ajax, that kid could not stop scoring before he got injured. Then things changed. Mertens did so well as the false nine that he kind of got forgotten, although he was coming back from an injury. So I know there's a lot of reports on Napoli wanting to give Milik an extension. I really think they need to build around him. I like Mertens, but he's older. Milik is more of a classic central striker. I think once Ghoulam comes back and he's going to send those delicious crosses in the box, I'd really like to see what Napoli can do with Milik. So I used to say Roma should blow it up. Maybe Napoli should consider blowing it up a little bit, but I'd really like to see what Milik can do for a full season if he can stay healthy leading Napoli's attack.
All right, well, staying on Napoli, this is pretty broad. What happened to Napoli, David? Where did it all go wrong?
So, look, we've been asked this question a lot of times, and, you know, I think, you know, the long and short of it is I still think too much is being made about Napoli's struggles and not enough about how great Juve has been this season in Serie A. To me, Napoli looks like a demoralized team. They went on that big streak, I think that won 10 in a row. Couldn't open a big lead in the standings. When I look at Napoli play, there's not that fun, that crispiness to their game. They just look like a team that's kind of lost it. I don't know if it's just an athletic thing. You know, of course, Sarri's ran some of these guys into the ground. You look at the minutes played compared to Juve. That's a big part of it. But I go back, and I've said it many times, the lack of activity during the January window. And look, Sarri's partially responsible for this because he's shown that he's so reticent to include new players. But I think, you know, we were talking about it earlier, how, you know, sometimes you play to win the game. I almost think, you know, Napoli's been very disciplined financially. They never have FFP issues. Their balance sheet for the transfer budget's usually about even every year. But I think you have a chance to win the title. There's an opening there. I really think Napoli in January should have gone all out. I'm going to say that's really the main reason they didn't do it. The other thing, and I kind of hinted at it with Milik, I think Mertens has really ran out of gas, just not playing the brilliant way that he did. So it's unfortunate. I think there's going to be a lot of regret for this Napoli season.
Yeah, Mertens has been very quiet recently. It's shocking he was even that good for as long as he was, but he's definitely dwindled as of late. All right, David, next Twitter question. Should Roma use the 3-4-1-2 formation the rest of the season or use it only when they are short on wingers?
So, you know, Di Francesco was given a lot of credit for kind of flipping formations and going with the three center backs against Barcelona, and it really worked. Now, I don't know if that's an outlier against a great offense, and he didn't have a lot of options for his starting lineup, but that seemed to work very well. Now, again, it's probably based on who the opponent is. Maybe Roma needs to take that into account, but Di Francesco, his whole career has been a 4-3-3 disciple. Seems like he's sticking to that. again, but I'm curious if against Liverpool he brings back that formation because of their great attack. It's certainly a good thing to see him have a little bit more options, because I think he was a little bit too stubborn with that 4-3-3 for a while. But I suspect that will still be the base formation for them.
All right, this next player is being rumored quite a bit. David, is the old lady interested in signing Anthony Martial?
So it's a great question, and we've talked about it. We've been asked this before, and I look at Juve squad. I look at Bernardeschi, who's been impressive. We mentioned Douglas Costa. And keep in mind, Juve fans, Juve is going to have to pay a lot just to keep Douglas Costa. Let's not just assume they can spend a ton in the summer on brand new players. Like, they have an option on Douglas Costa for a lot of money. So, you know, Martial kind of plays a similar role. So I think Juve, you know, is definitely kicking the tires on this. But I think Juve has more of a long-term approach on this. Martial's contract expires in 2019, which is just next year. Maybe this is kind of an Emre Can situation where they're trying to maybe lay the groundwork if he goes into an expiring contract. My friend Fabrizio Romano also reported that Bayern Munich are interested in him as well. So I think, and that's a club that Juve has a great relationship with. So I think Juve will kind of monitor the situation. I don't think they're favorites for him in the summer by any means, but if he goes into an expiring contract, they might be a team to watch for him. So interesting situation there, but look out for Bayern Munich in these sweepstakes.
All right, staying on Juventus, should they consider switching Cuadrado to the right back position next season? And how likely are they to spend $90 million on a player?
So for this answer, I go back to what I just said on Douglas Costa. Again, Juve might make some big investments in the summer, but we have to account for the fact they have that huge option to buy on Douglas Costa. And look, you know, Juve did spend a fortune on Higuain, but that was after they had sold Pogba. They had spent significantly on Dybala and Alexandro, but that's when they had sold Vidal. So Juve is kind of like, you know, not as strict as Napoli, but they try to tend a pretty balanced book. I'm interested in, now that their revenues have gone up, if they'll spend more. I also think, if you know, the way they went out in the Champions League is going to make them really want to go all out and try to win it. So I'm curious to see what happens there. But my rule of thumb with transfers, until something happens, I believe that the status quo remains. To give you an example, until Bernardeschi went to Juve, I never assumed that a great Fiorentina player would be sold to Juve while his contract was still, you know, valid. But that changed, so I'm going to kind of take the same approach. Until Juve spends a ton without selling another big name, I'm going to assume they won't. As far as Cuadrado, that could be a pretty intriguing option. I actually think one thing that stood out to me about Cuadrado at Juve under Allegri is how much better he is defensively, but he's also such a dominating force offensively. I could maybe see him, if Allegri once in a while goes back to the three-man defense as a right wing back. I'm not sure as a classic right back in a four-man defense he could do it. But hey, it's not like he defends far worse than Dani Alves, to give you an example. So not crazy, but maybe more in a three-man defense than a four-man one.
Yeah, I could definitely see him as a wing back, but definitely not as a right back. He's so frail. He's so skinny. He could not be a true defender. But David, let's stay on Juventus. Who do you see as Juve's long-term captain, with most likely Buffon retiring, Marchisio potentially leaving, and Chiellini and Barzagli getting up in age?
It's a great question. You know, in a way, it kind of reminds me how for years De Rossi was the captain in waiting and Totti would just never retire. And you were almost like, is De Rossi going to actually retire before Totti? So it's kind of an interesting situation. Now, I think, you know, once Buffon was supposed to leave, and I think the Italy not making the World Cup threw a big monkey wrench and all that, we always assume Marchisio or Chiellini would take over, maybe more Chiellini because he was a starter. And I think eventually he's the next in line for that. But I think Chiellini is 32 this year. It's going to be very interesting down the road who that person is. You know, I was thinking maybe Pjanic. I don't think Juve has a huge preference for it being an Italian player or not. Maybe Bernardeschi down the road. So a pretty interesting question. It's also not out of the question that Juve's future captain isn't quite on the squad quite yet. So an intriguing one. Our listeners, if you have any votes, please send it in using the Calcioland hashtag. I'd be curious to see who your pick is.
All right, David, this might be an opportunity to get up on that soapbox. Should Gigi Buffon apologize to help stop all the abuse directed at the referee and his family?
Okay, so let me try. I'm really trying to be as balanced as I can be on this. And, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast last Thursday, you know, right after. So me personally, I wasn't a big fan of Buffon's quotes. And I think you did a great job, Alex, talking about the context. So to me, in the context of the moment, I can understand it. I'm not going to say I justify it. I'm not going to kill him for it. But I really believe that's not kind of the things that I like to see, especially for a club like Juve. On Thursday's podcast, you know, I talked about this video of the Avvocato Agnelli when he was asked about referees in the 80s, and he goes, look, here at Juve, this is not in our customs to talk about referees, penalties. That's for provincial teams. We're not going to start today. And I really like that. I also, Buffon's always the first one to tell Serie A fans and other clubs in Serie A that they talk about referees out of jealousy. So I thought that was a little bit hypocritical. So I would have preferred if Buffon came out and say, look, you know, I was in the heat of the moment. I was standing up for my team and my fans, which I can respect, but I didn't think it was appropriate. But a big but, I don't think he's responsible for the abuse directed at the referee and his girlfriend. I don't justify it in any way. I'm completely against it, but I don't think he's responsible for that. I believe, and I could be wrong, that say Buffon hadn't even complained, say he hadn't gotten a red card, say Real Madrid gets the penalty kick, it gets converted, and Juve gets eliminated that way, I hate to say it, I think that abuse to the referee and his wife, unfortunately, would happen anyways. So I think there's two kind of arguments here. Now, you know, would it be great if Buffon came out and said, you know what, this abuse of the referee and his girlfriend needs to stop. This is out of line. This is not what I intended. That would actually be great. So that's kind of my opinion on that. I wasn't a fan of his statements. I would prefer if he came out and said that he was wrong and to try to stop the abuse, but I don't think he's responsible for that. And I think people making him out to be is pretty disingenuous, and I really don't appreciate that. But that being said, he was out of line, and I think it's important even for some more Juve fans to say that.
All right, this is an interesting question here. What needs to change to have Serie A fans support rival teams in Europe?
I just don't think with Juve specifically it'll ever happen. It goes back to what we were talking about Buffon. I think with Roma you might see it a little bit more. But I just think you just won't see it with Juve. I doubt a lot of Juve fans were supporting Inter when they were on their way to the treble, so it's not just with Juve. I just think there's some deeply ingrained rivalries. I will tell you that one thing that stood out to me with this whole Buffon drama is, like, really how incredible it is, like, you know, fan bases, and especially on Twitter, when you're kind of in an echo chamber reading and following people that share a lot of the same opinions, how it's so predictable what fans of certain teams would say. Like, almost all fans of a team, I can just look at the, if you told me the team they support, I'd be able to guess a lot of where you stand on a lot of issues. And I think, quite frankly, that's sad. So I respect the Juve fans that have spoken out and said I would have preferred Buffon do better. I respect fans, non-Juve fans, that say, hey, you know, that's a terrible way to go out. Maybe Milan fans that say to Juve fans, get over what happened with Buffon, but yet they're still talking about the gol di Muntari. Maybe that's not the most kosher and logical thing either. So I think, you know, what's happening a lot with fan bases in Italy would say a partito preso. So you have an opinion and you're not going to change it just because you're kind of defending your little interest. And I think that's a little bit sad. So that's my take on that.
All right, next Twitter question. Is Dalbert on his way out at Inter now that Santone is playing ahead of him?
Yeah, I mean, Inter invested a lot on him. Spalletti had made some comments how Dalbert wasn't practicing well enough. As we're recording this, it looks like Inter's trying to close the deal for Asamoah to come be their next left back. I'm assuming that's where they'll play him, not as a midfielder. And that tells me that that's really going to be the end for Dalbert. I have to say, I think the Asamoah signing for Inter, assuming it happens, and it looks pretty likely, that's quite the move from Inter. I think he's been really good this season and an underrated loss for Juve. So if that deal happens, I really think Dalbert's on his way out and most likely heading back to Liga.
Interesting. All right, next question. Where will Simone Verdi end up this summer?
So, yeah, he had that great goal for Bologna. He's great on set pieces. So for those of you who don't remember, he was really close to joining Napoli. Then he turned down the move. I think Napoli could potentially still be an option for them. I actually think it'd be pretty intriguing if they go with Milik as the central striker to have Verdi as an option on the wing. He can play on other side. I know he's also been linked to Inter. I'd be curious to see if they want to make a change from Candreva and Perisic. So I would say those two teams, you know, he's a Milan youth system player. Maybe he could be intriguing to them. But my guess is either Inter or Napoli as of now, but that could change pretty quickly.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. If Pulp Fiction wasn't an option, what would your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie be?
Ooh, it's a great question. So I love Tarantino, definitely up there as one of my favorite directors. The first time I saw Pulp Fiction, I remember exactly where I was before it, during it, and afterwards, and that's when, you know, a movie has really made an impression on you. But, you know, I actually don't know if it would have been my top pick for a Tarantino movie. I think that's probably his best movie. Maybe not my favorite. I'm a huge fan of Reservoir Dogs, which is the one he did before. It was done on a shoestring budget. A lot of great actors are in it. Some fantastic lines. Like that, to me, that movie was just really, really incredible. Some of his recent ones, I wasn't a big fan of Hateful Eight. I thought it was way too long. I really liked Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained, but I kind of like more of the old school crime movies from Tarantino. As much as I like, you know, in all the different directions he's going in, I'd like to see him make more movies like Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. And the one that I really like, and the more I rewatch it, I like it more and more, is Jackie Brown. Actually, really a great movie. It's much more in the Reservoir Dog Pulp Fiction vein than some of his newer ones. So I'm going to say Reservoir Dogs is my pick, but Jackie Brown is definitely one to watch. So thank you all for the questions. As usual, we appreciate your support. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave us a 5-star rating. It would literally take you 2 seconds if you're on your iPhone now. If you're listening to us on Android device, please follow us on SoundCloud or listen to us on Stitcher. And as always, thank you so much for the support. Okay, and for the interview segment of the podcast, I wanted to kind of take stock of everything that's happened at Milan in the past year. So last week, we had the one-year anniversary of Berlusconi selling the club. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty surrounding Milan a little bit, both on and off the pitch. So I wanted to get the perspective of someone that covers Milan on a regular basis. And he's a great friend of the podcast. So I invited Michael Lisi for his debut on Calcioland. You guys can read him on the Fossa dei Leoni blog, which I often retweet. Michael writes a lot about Milan, so perfect guest for this. So, Michael, first of all, welcome to Calcioland. It's a real pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you for the invite, David. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so let's chat a little bit about Milan. So as I mentioned, we had the one-year anniversary of the sale the past few days. So let's still take the time machine. Let's go back in time. Say you and I were chatting, and I come back from the future, and I tell you, you know what, Michael? In the next year, Milan's going to spend $200 million on transfers. They're still not going to have a Champions League spot. They're going to be eliminated by Arsenal, you know, not too early in the Europa League, but maybe a little bit earlier than we would have liked. And Gattuso is now the manager. Out of all these things, what would have surprised you the most?
Well, first of all, if you had come back in time and told me we were going to actually spend $200 million, I would have told you were crazy. But going on from that, the first thing I'd say is probably the Europa League, because knowing, let me put those in reverse order. I apologize. But the least surprise, I think, would be the Europa League, just because you're bringing in 10, 11, I think it ended up being 12 guys last summer. You're figuring all that out. You got to go through a whole season. You're fighting in the Copa, and then you're also, you know, working on the Europa League. I think that, to me, probably real quickly, with the way Sixers pile up, would be the least. Second is probably the league, I would say, only because I think going into this year, You know, you had Juve and Napoli, which I think just about everybody picked one or the other to win the league. Plus two, you had Inter coming back with most everybody and also not competing in Europe, so you kind of figured they would be up there. Also Lazio and Roma. I think really, honestly, the thing that surprised me the most would be Montella not being around and Gattuso being the coach, only because, you know, you go into this big project, you spend all this money, and I found it odd last summer that you were going to do all that and then still keep the old coach. It seemed kind of strange that you would go and you would start a new project, you'd bring, you know, obviously new management in, new everybody in. I mean, they even chased out his trainer last summer, you know, but then you would keep him around. Like, this new management team wouldn't want to bring in their own guy, you know, and then it was like, okay, well, if the new management is behind him, then clearly, for whatever reason, they think he's their guy. Even at the end of summer, they brought Kalinic in, which was clearly Montella's choice to be the new number nine up front. And 12 weeks later, he's gone and Gattuso's the coach. So to me, in a way, that's kind of the most surprising thing, that you would start this whole project, spend all this money, bring in almost an entirely new 11, except for Donnarumma, and 12 weeks later, you would want to go find a coach. So that's kind of the way I see it.
Interesting. So I think with Gattuso, there's a little bit of prisoner of the moment syndrome, and actually maybe not having a complete sense of realistically which types of managers could accept the Milan job. And I go back to the fact that after Montella was sacked, there were some big names out there, but Milan kind of always had their eyes set on Gattuso. He was kind of the coach in waiting with the Primavera. So I know there's been a lot of controversy with Gattuso signing that extension not that long ago. But then, you know, we have a good performance like we had yesterday. We're recording this on Monday after Milan played well against Napoli without the two starting center backs in a clean sheet. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of praise for Gattuso. Then there's a poor match. And then people are like, why are we going to keep this coach? We should be getting someone better. So let me ask you, have you seen enough from Gattuso to think he's the right man to lead Milan's project for the foreseeable future?
I got to honestly say, I'm very surprised with how well he's done so far when he first came on board in December. And then obviously the first two results were Benevento. And then we had a loss at that point in the group stage in the Copa. I wasn't sure if he was going to last more than a couple months. I thought we might even have another manager by the end of the year. But honestly, by this point, there was even that moment where he came out, I can't remember which game it was after, where he basically said he was ready to quit. A couple outlets were like, oh, he quit already, he's gone. But honestly, since, you know, those first couple matches, which, hey, he's a new coach, showing up in the middle of the year, you know, you can excuse those. I mean, he's done very well. Our home record has been absolutely outstanding. I think our only losses at home since he showed up were Arsenal, and right after he got the job, Atalanta, right after the first of the year. Other than that, I mean, he's done great at home, and we've played, you know, we've played just about all of the top six since then. I think we've only lost one of those, and that was to Juventus. I mean, I think he's done fantastic, and I would say he's definitely earned the extension, you know, by how well he's done. The only, like, possible negatives I see is our scoring has slowly come to like a crawl, and it kind of reminiscent of, like, you know, his Pisa days, where I think the one stretch at one point they had scored like 10 goals in like 25 games. We haven't gotten to that point, but that's the only kind of thing that worries me, is that our scoring has slowly, and so the defense has gotten great, no complaints there, but it's almost like he needs to find an assistant or, you know, somebody to give him a little help on the offensive end of the pitch.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you there. And I totally didn't expect him to do as well as he did. I think that you can definitely see some improvements with Milan. I'm of the opinion that there wasn't that many managers that were probably realistic for Milan. So in a sense, to me, it makes a lot of sense to keep going with him. So let me ask you, we're going to end on something positive, I promise, but I want to get your pulse on how concerned you are with Milan's ownership situation. Like, look, you know, there's a lot of different reports on this. So you as a fan and someone that covers the team, I want to get specifically your take. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you with the ownership situation?
I would put myself right in the middle, around a 5 or 6. I was never somebody that got too worked up and bent out of shape with, you know, the previous duo with Berlusconi and Galliani. I mean, I always appreciated what they did. I never got too stressed out with them, and I tend to not let myself worry about the current situation a whole lot, mostly because I don't understand most of it. You know, a lot of the takeover and everything like that. I mean, you guys did a fantastic series, like right around the holidays this past year.
Yeah.
Where you had like the four pods, where you had a couple different gentlemen on that came to talk about different aspects of it. And honestly, listen to most of what they said, seemed to be pretty positive. I mean, they weren't acting like, you know, everything's great, but they also weren't acting like the sky was falling. So
yeah. When
I see stuff like, when I hear stuff like that and see stuff like that from more reputable sources, it kind of, you know, warms me up a little bit. You know, I feel a little better. Yeah. I'm not too stressed out. I also have in the back of my mind, though, that, you know, I know we're clearly not going out and spending $200 million more this summer. I'm no financial fair play expert, but I also know that, you know, we're not going to be in the Champions League this year. And, you know, we got to get there next year. And if we're going to spend anything this summer, I mean, you almost have to say we're going to be top four next year. So, I mean, I'll get stressed out when, like, if we're at this point next season and we're sitting in seventh or eighth, and Champions League has sailed, and all of a sudden rumors of selling everybody start surfacing. But for now, I'm going to just kind of keep that to the side and hope for the best, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good approach. I mean, my take is simple. I never believed in a million years Milan would fail or go bankrupt. Like, the brand's just too strong. Now, you know, who owns it or whatnot's up for debate, but I think, you know, it's either one extreme or the other with people. They're going to go bankrupt or we're going to spend $200 million. And the truth, as you said, is somewhere in the middle. So I agree with your take. So let's end with – go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, what I was going to say also, it's kind of like when the sale was rumored for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, how long did that drag on? And like you were just saying, I kind of felt the same way. It's, hey, someday we either will be sold or we won't. Am I going to write 10,000 words in the next year on if I think we're going to sell or not? Probably not, because I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So why worry about it? Why stress about it? You know, so I'm certainly not going to, you know, write a whole bunch of posts about it because I don't know, you know, and one day, sure enough, we were sold and, you know, it was done with and we moved forward. So, you know, if this turns out to be a mess and a failure, then one day it will. But otherwise, you know, I'm not going to worry about it. I tend to worry far more about what happens on the field and the players on the team than the management or the players we don't have. So.
It's a very good attitude. So let's end, though, on something positive. Like, in the past year, there's certainly been a lot of changes since Berlusconi left. So tell me, what has been your favorite development? And it really could be anything. It could be the team's use of social media, or it could be the way a player has improved, or something totally different. So tell me, as someone that covers Milan, what has been the development that has intrigued you the most in a positive way?
I think in the last 12 months or so, I think more than anything, and maybe it sounds a little pie in the sky, but hope. You know, I've got, you know, we've got a management team that, as far as I'm concerned, has made not perfect, but excellent choices. I would say 80 to 90% of the time. Like I said, the Montel thing was a little odd, and you know, now we're just kind of stuck with Kaunas. But otherwise, I've been very happy with everybody they've signed. I've been very pleasantly surprised, like we talked about, very pleasantly surprised with Gattuso at first. Didn't know if he was going to last like 90 days. Turned out pretty good. Of everybody we've signed, I mean, other than, you know, you can't really judge Conte because he played a handful of games and got hurt. So he's out the window. But other than that, almost every signing has been good to very good to excellent. I mean, people like to, you know, cap on Kalinic quite a bit. I kind of like the guy. He just can't finish, which is, you know, certainly maddening to everybody. But that's honestly what it is more than anything. After 3 or 4 years of the Jeremy Menezes of the world and, you know, like Carlos Bacca, who clearly didn't want to be there 9 months after he showed up, and kind of being a club that was slowly slipping back away from the bigger clubs in Europe. Like I said, hard time attracting people. Those that did come didn't seem to want to stay. You know, now we seem to have finally turned the corner, and things are really more positive from top to bottom. I mean, if you're on Twitter right after games, okay, maybe you don't think that. But for the most part, you know, really top to bottom, it's been very, very positive. And that's really been about the best thing. I mean, even we've noticed, you know, on our site as far as like traffic and comments and all that kind of stuff. I mean, going way back, it's always the better the team does and the more positive it is, the actual your traffic kind of levels off and goes down. It's when people are complaining and they have something to complain about rightfully that sometimes you end up with a little too many comments than what you'd like. So, you know, I think there's just been a slow, you know, it's not like we turned it around overnight. We're going to finish first this year. We're going to be in the Champions League and blah, blah, blah. You know, in a way, we're kind of at the same point. But I think the club needed to kind of bottom out and then start picking itself back up. And I think we're in a very good position right now moving forward.
Excellent. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure. I look forward to chatting with you more about Milan in the coming months. So thanks again, my friend.
No, thank you, David. I greatly appreciate it.